Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It's time to play the game.
It may be the nighttime,
but the sports talk doesn't stop.
Sports talk radio that's live, local,
and not for the faint of heart.
Oh, you didn't know?
Sometimes angry.
Loud noises!
Telling it like it is.
You insulted him a little bit. You got a little out of order yourself.
And pretty much always right.
Don't ever argue with the big dog. Big dog is always right.
Text or call 404-741-0929 and be part of the show.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Kia Studios, it's time for the John Chuckery Show. Serving you up sports on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
And welcome into Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Yes, it is time for the John Chuckery Show. Hanging out with you in the Kia Studios on this Thursday evening with you. With you for the full four. We're asking you to download the Odyssey app. You're not in the car as much. You want to listen in. Put the Odyssey app on one of your devices today. You can use your smartphone. You can use your Alexa speakers. You can use your tablet. Your Atari 2600. Your Swatch Watch. Your Ring doorbell. Whatever your device is. Just download it on something to be able to catch us when you're on the go. Social media is at 929 The Game on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And as always, best way to be a part of the show is to follow us on our personal Twitter pages. I am at JMCH316. That is your water cooler talking points 3 to 6 months in advance of anybody else that is out there. On the other side of the glass, producing the show, as always, Day Day in the house at the D. Lewis for real. I don't know the last time when I've had a producer that worked this many consecutive shows with me. Probably Jarvis. I mean, that's probably the last time that I had this many consecutive shows with one producer. So it feels nice to not have to do the kind of round robin of everything. So, all right, as Jim Ross would say, we're busier than a fruit merchant here tonight. So lots to get into here. Look, the Braves last night, we talked about this as they finished up. They sweep the doubleheader. So here's where we stand now as we, the Braves are back home and heading into a series against Colorado Rockies. 4.5 games up on the Marlins, 7.5 games up on the full Bullful Fool, 10 games up on the New York Mets, and we don't even count Washington. Are they a major league team still? Are they playing minor league baseball or whatever out there? So they're 15 games back, so they're no threat. Rockies in town tonight. A.J. Smith-Sharver. He gets his second start. It'll be his third game overall. He did have one relief appearance. So far, so good for Shar. I mean, look, 7 2/3 innings that he's pitched thus far. No earned runs that he's given up. 5 strikeouts, 3 walks. So, so far, so good for him. And, let's see if he can figure out a way to pitch again, against a Rockies team that is they're not very good. They're not very good. I mean, Kyle Freeland tonight, 4-7 with a 3.91 ERA. He's got 49 strikeouts and 76 innings pitched. He's given up 12 homers in 76 innings pitched. 12 homers in 76 innings pitched. What? Hey, Day-Day, do you have a calculator handy with you?
Pulling it up right now.
Okay, take 200 divided by 76.
Okay, that is 2.63.
All right, and multiply that number by 12.
By 12, that is 31.57.
So he's a 32 home run given up pitcher in 200 innings.
Wow.
Whew. Yeah. That's a lot of homers in 200 innings. That's a lot to be given up. So hopefully, as the Braves have done, you know, again, the Braves have not pitched all that well here in the month of June. I believe they're 9-3 in the month of June. They've not pitched all that well, but man, they are mashing the baseball. And Michael Harris is now getting hot. Ronnie's obviously the MVP of the league. You know, Matt Olson still, for all of his woes, he still gets on base. Arcia's been lights out. Ozuna, you know, still been good. You know, Riley's kind of, you know, trying to get some things figured out. Sean Murphy's been good. Darno's had some moments. I mean, the depth of this lineup, and they can just mash you to death. And that's what they're doing. That's what they had to do yesterday, right? I mean, they had to score 17 runs, you know, to win a doubleheader yesterday. And it took every run that they could muster, right? Because we talked about between Strider and Dylan Dodd, they gave up 6 homers to the Tigers, who had hit the 4th fewest homers in Major League Baseball. So the Braves are getting it done offensively. I mean, that's been the calling card for the Braves this particular month, especially. It's been their offense. It hasn't been their pitching. Their starting pitching has been kind of, you know, hit or miss or, you know, on here. And Ozzie's playing well now. I mean, he's swinging the bat well. I mean, just, you know, on and on and on and on. And obviously Michael Harris and Orlando Arcia, you know, at the bottom of the order. When those guys, we talked about this last night, when those guys are getting on, that 7-8-9 spot, when those guys are getting on and driving in runs, this team won't be beat. All right, here's your lineup for tonight against the Colorado Rockies. Ronnie in the leadoff spot. Ozzie is hitting second tonight. That's very interesting. Ozzie hitting second, Riley third, Murphy in the cleanup spot, then Matt Olson, Ozuna, Pilar, Arcia, Michael Harris, and obviously A.J. Smith-Shawver on the mound tonight. Now, look, I'm one of those people that doesn't think that I don't like the idea of Matt Olson hitting second. And he's obviously done well, better than he has last year. Remember, they moved him out of the second spot and moved him down to like third, fourth, where, again, that's where I want Matt Olson. I want him to be the ultimate run producer because, again, you're going to get some guys on base in front of him, 1, 2, 3 guys on base in front of him, and I want to see him just mashing away. Just mashing away. That's where he needs to be, is in a pure run production spot. I know he's got the good on base, and that's why Snicker plays him in that two-hole. He bats him in that two-hole because he's one of your better on-base percentage guys. I get that. I understand. This is modern-day baseball, right? It's not where you have a traditional leadoff hitter with lots of speed at the top, guys who get on base, run around the bases like gazelles, or, you know, out of control, you know, hyenas, and then you got a masher in the middle, right? That was the Cardinals in 1987. It was Vince Coleman, then Willie McGee, then Tom Herr, and then it was Jack Clark. And what, he hit 37 homers and drove in 124 runs. On base, speed, slapping a ball all over the place, Jack Clark cleaning everybody up. And that's how it is. I mean, that's, you know, again, that's a traditional baseball lineup. But again, in today's, you know, in today's modern day, you know, metrosexual baseball and all this kind of stuff, you know, again, that's not how you play the game anymore. Let me look here real quick. Vince Coleman scored 121 runs in 1980. How about this, Day-Day? Vince Coleman scored 121 runs in 1987. Willie McGee hit 285, drove in 100 runs, and scored 76. Tommy Herr scored 73, drove in 83. Hey, he had 19 steals. Coleman had 109. Willie McGee had 16. And then there's Jack Clark 93 runs, 35 homers, 106 RBI. He walked 136 times that year. 136 times. He hit 286 with a 459 on base and a 1.055 OPS. That's speed, speed, speed at the top of the order. Jack Clark bombs away, mashing the ball all over the place. That's a lineup. Terry Pendleton, by the way, had 96 RBI for the Cardinals that year too. So interesting. I mean, look, it's interesting that they're going to hit Ozzie up there. I like the idea of lots of speed at the top of the order. But again, I really do like Ozzie in that five hole because he's a run producer now. I mean, he's got the speed. He doesn't have as good on base, but he's a run producer now. He's a 100 RBI guy. But it is interesting that they have moved Matt Olson down in the order. So we'll see how all of this plays out. And again, we talked about the Rockies. I mean, they're no good, right? I mean, they're not a very good baseball team. 29-41. They have the third fewest wins in the National League. They're a minus 70 in run differential. That's the worst in the National League. And only because you've got the Oakland A's, Detroit Tigers, and Kansas City Royals that they're not the worst in Major League Baseball. They're 13-22 on the road this year. So this should be minimum 3 out of 4 for the Braves. That should be the minimum expectation. Well, things don't always go the way, but yeah, they do. When you're playing the Rockies at home, all right, and they're going to have the red uniforms on tomorrow night, so that's also a good sign. But Braves will get underway here in just a few minutes. We'll keep you up to date all night long about what's going on. The U.S. Open is underway at the L.A. Country Golf Club in Los Angeles, California. Ricky Fowler and Xander Schauffele, 8 under. I think there have been times when, like, 8 under was the 4-round total for the U.S. Open. I didn't feel like a round one U.S. Open kind of score. But they have the lead right now. A very top-heavy American leaderboard where when you look at Fowler, Schauffele, Harmon, Clark, then Rory, then DeChambeau, Scheffler. What is that? 6 of the top 7 guys. And then again, you have Siwoo Kim and Barjan. But, you know, most of the top part, half of the leaderboard is all American players. But Fowler and Schauffele, 8 under for the round, for the day. 62 they shot in round one. I don't know how many 8 under rounds have been shot in U.S. Open history, but I would think there would be not too many. Now, we'll talk to our buddy Will Gray, who we always turn to when it's majors time. He's one of the best in the business. I always like talking to Will because he always has good things to say, and he's very smart about the sport. He really knows the sport inside and out. So we'll talk to him coming up. And we'll talk to our buddy Gabe Burns, feature writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Talk a lot of Braves with him, bounce around to the Hawks, bounce around to the Falcons. We are a week away from the Atlanta Hawks draft party. Caleb Johnson, Sparty, and myself. I'm going to sit in the middle because I do think that there could be some haymakers thrown between Caleb and Sparty. I'm just saying, I think that that's something that could happen. Anyway, all right, 404-726-0929. Very simple question, 404-726-0929. Desmond Ridder, over, under, 475 passes. Chuck Green, the Kia Studios, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, the Odyssey.com app.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 92.9 at the game. Back at a Chuckery Show, hanging out in the Kia Studios on this Thursday evening with you. Getting ready for some Braves baseball. First pitch just about to happen here in a few minutes. Watching the end of the U.S. Open as well. We'll talk to our buddy Will Gray coming up here in about 20 minutes from right now and get his thoughts about a very interesting club, by the way, too. An ultra, ultra private club in L.A., the L.A. Country Club. So we'll get his thoughts about where we're at. All right, it's very simple. 404-726-0929. 404-726-0929. Over or under 475 pass attempts for Desmond Ridder. When you look at the numbers last year, the Falcons were obviously one of the lowest passing teams in the NFL. And most of that is because we had a guy that was more a shot put artist than he was a throwing quarterback. And, you know, I kind of warned a lot of people about what Marcus Mariota was going to be. I mean, yeah, he can run it, but he'd never been a guy that threw it a lot. And I literally spent shows talking about this. I gave you the average number of attempts. You know, I told you, he had never thrown more than 450 attempts in a season. He threw 300 last year in 13 games. 300 in 13 games. And we talked about when they throw it over 20 times, what their record is, and when they throw it under 20 times, what their record is. Desmond Ridder threw it 115 times. He had 115 pass attempts in the four games that he started. At that pace, he would be 488 and a half pass attempts for the season. Now, do I think that the Falcons are going over the 475 total? Is Desmond Ridder going to go over or under the 475? I think it's going to be the under. While I do think that they will throw it more than 415 times, I don't think they're going to get to 475. Now, by the way, the Falcons had it thrown against them 561 times. And that's where a lot of the quarterbacks live. That's where Matt lived. That's where the Aarons and the Bradys and all those kinds of guys that were playing in the league, that's where those guys live. Pat Mahomes and all these kinds of guys. But if I had to bet, I would bet the under right now. I think you're going to feature a dynamic running game with Algier and Bijan Robinson. I think both of those guys could be 1,000-yard rushers. Certainly, you know, probably 1,300 yards from scrimmage. But I think those two guys can have a big year. You've got an offensive line that is geared to run block. And let me say that again. You have an offensive line that is geared to run block. We don't know what Caleb McGarry is as a pass blocker because when he has had to pass block on a regular basis, see Matt Ryan's numbers, he wasn't a very good offensive lineman. And now we're inserting a rookie into the mix at left guard, and you have fears about, okay, can a rookie handle that kind of spot? And he's obviously playing at a new position for him. I think that's a lot of pressure to put on Matthew Bergeron. Drew Dolman, I mean, again, I don't like the idea of throwing it 500-600 times and him getting pushed around up front. So I think the number is still going to be under. I still think the number is going to be under. Will it be more than the 415 that they had last year? Yes. I do think that they're somewhere in that 450, 460 kind of range to it. But I don't think they get to 475. I don't think Arthur Smith wants to put the ball up in the air that much. And they can certainly lean on a really good run game, a stout offensive line, doing what they do best and pushing people around. And frankly, that's how they've won games. That's how they've been able to win the 14 games over the last couple of years that they have, is that they can control the clock, run the football, be efficient. You know, again, at times you saw last year when they tried to throw it, when they tried to throw at times last year when they were behind and this, that, and the other, it looked like they had never tried, they had never attempted a forward pass. And there's not being accurate as a quarterback, and then there's just being not good at quarterback, right? I mean, inaccuracy is sort of one thing. They didn't look competent at times. You can be a bad pass offense, but when you start to look incompetent throwing the football, that's what Marcus Mariota was. He looked incompetent throwing the football. He looked like he'd never thrown an NFL pass accurately before in his life. And I know he has, but I think Desmond Ridder can get into that 450 kind of range. I think 475 is a little bit high. When you start leaning on that offensive line, when you start looking at, you know, the running backs that they have back there, you start looking at the offensive. I mean, again, I think everything sets itself up for this to be a obviously run-heavy offense. And again, they were, I think, the second most run-heavy offense in the NFL last year. I think they called the highest percentage of run plays or something like that last year. So, I mean, again, they're going to be a run-first team as long as Arthur Smith is here. As long as Arthur's the head coach of this squad, they're going to be guys that run the football. And look, we've talked about Algier and Bijan Robinson, that this could be two guys that when you look up at the end of the year, they could both have 1,000 yards. And by the way, Algier got 1,000 yards and only 7 starts and 210 carries because he averaged almost 5 yards a carry. So it wasn't like Algier had this workman's load of the offense draped upon him, right? Yeah. Again, hey, Day-Day, look up Jamal Anderson's rushing attempts from 1988. Actually, you know what? I'll look it up because I know we only got 4 hours on our show. In 1998, Jamal Anderson, I think he set the record that year for carries in a season. Okay, Jamal Anderson led the NFL with, are you ready, 410 attempts rushing the football. He had 410 rushing attempts. Now, I don't think that that's going to be the kind of number any running back that we have is, but again, I could see Tyler Algier and Bijan Robinson being both in the 200s with probably Ridder not running it as much, and both of those guys being 1,000-yard running backs. And I think that that's a real possibility for this team. And if that's the case and they can lean on that kind of running attack, then why throw it 40 times a game? Why put the ball in harm's way? And this may be another year where we don't see the true value of a Pitts or London or things like that. That'd be a shame. And I still think that Pitts needs to have that Travis Kelce kind of year that when you do throw it, they better feature him a lot. They better throw it up to him a whole lot. But I'll take the under in that number. I'll take the under of 475 pass attempts. I don't think they get to that kind of height. I don't think even with Desmond Ridder that they're trying to push that kind of envelope. I don't think that they are looking at that kind of number out of their quarterback for right now. Now, Desmond Ridder plays well and he shows he can handle more of an increased workload, then they might throw it, you know, they might get to a point where they throw it 500 times in a season. Now we're talking about Matt Ryan kinds of numbers, 550, 570, 600 pass attempts in a season. And I think that there's a fear that if you drop back that often, that some of the flaws in our offensive line start to get exposed. That Caleb McGarry is a guy who ends up getting exposed. And I'm not saying he's not been better, but we still have yet to see it when he pass protects. So I'll take the under in that 475 attempts number. And you give us your thoughts at 404-726-0929. But I think that Algier, Bijan Robinson, I think those guys are over 200 carries apiece. I think they're both 1,000-yard running backs. I think that's what Arthur Smith wants to do, where he's got an offensive line that can road grade people, and he's got two dynamic backs that he doesn't have to burn out somebody in it. I still think that's the way the Falcons' offense is going to run. Now, they may throw it more in the red zone. They may open it up in the red zone some, and I hope that's what they do because, again, we need to get to that elite level. We need to get to that 65, 66%, you know, touchdown percentage in the red zone. That puts us in elite status. I mean, that puts us in, you know, 67 and above, I believe, is like top five in the NFL. That's where we need to live. You can maybe open it up a little bit down there because I don't think Desmond Ridder is the type of quarterback who's going to get all that many turnovers. Part of that is because they won't let him throw it, you know, as much. And part of that is just I think he's a smarter player with the football. Just in general, I think he's a smarter overall player than what Marcus Mariota was. And certainly, I think, you know, he had all kinds of success in college or whatever like that. And Mariota did too. I mean, that's why he was the number two pick in the draft. Heisman Trophy winner and all that good kind of stuff. But the NFL game is different. It's a different animal when you get up to the NFL level. And we've seen much better quarterbacks coming out of college than Desmond Ridder that didn't do anything in the NFL. So I still think that they lean on that run game quite a bit. I still think that they lean on that game with their offensive line where Algier, Robinson, they can run right behind the right side of that line and feel confident in it. And again, we talked about this. This could be the best offensive line in 25 years for the Falcons. If Dahlman is fixed and he moves on and can be good, if the Matthew Bergeron can be solid, just even solid at left guard. That's still been an upgrade over what we've had the last couple of years where we've been getting blown up all the time. So I'll take the 475 under. I still think he's about a 25-touchdown quarterback because I think they do throw it around a little bit more when they get into the red zone. And I still think that Desmond Ridder is a 25 kind of touchdown quarterback passing the football, which is, you know, I think that's about right, about average and stuff. You know, I don't know when's the last time we've seen, you know, Matt Ryan obviously done it multiple times, but I think when's the last season we've seen 25 or more touchdowns out of a Falcons quarterback. For this team, that's kind of heady heights, right? Except when Matt is here, but I mean, again, that's kind of heady heights and loftiness, you know, right now with the way that this team is constructed, and obviously they want to run the football. And it will be interesting to see how Patterson works himself into the offense. Is he a running back? Is he more of a slot wide receiver? What all can he do? So we'll see what happens with it all. But obviously, you know, look, the anticipation for the season coming up is high right now, right? People are on a high after mandatory minicamp and all that good kind of stuff. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to our buddy Will Gray. We'll get his thoughts about the U.S. Open as it's taking place right now, trying to finish up here over these last few golfers. Chuck Green, the Kia Studios, Sports Radio, 99.9 The Game, the Odyssey.com app. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, back at a Chuck Reese Show, hanging out in the Kia Studios on this Thursday evening with you. 404-726-0929, 404-726-0929. That's our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Braves are underway right now. U.S. Open is kind of wrapping up here, and one of the great mystery courses, I guess, you know, in the city of Los Angeles, where it's really not visible anywhere on the streets or anything like that. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. He is our guy in the know. He oversees Golf Bet for the PGA Tour. Will Gray joining us. And you can follow Will on his personal Twitter page, at Will Gray Golf Bet. Will, as always, man, appreciate the time. Thank you so much. And listen, clear up the mystery about what this course is, because it is the secretive course, I guess, that that they're playing at the Los Angeles Country Club.
Yeah, John, good to be with you, as always, for these big events. I mean, it's next to the Playboy Mansion, right? So it's kind of sticking out. It's sticking out there. Not that hard to find out in La La Land. But it's been interesting to see. You know, I enjoy these tournaments. We've had a few of them at the U.S. Open in recent years. We get to see a new course, and this is one that, yes, they had the Pac-12 championships there about 10 years ago, and yes, they had a Walker Cup back in 2017, but this is really the first time that these pros are able to get their hands on this course, and so far the scores are certainly much lower than we expected, but I think that that could change by the time we get to the weekend.
So help me understand, because this is an ultra-private club, can guys who are going to play in this event play this course at, you know, at any time or only the week leading in? Or, I mean, help me understand about what exposure the guys in this tournament would have had to this course.
A lot of it depends on when you qualified, right? So with the U.S. Open, they do the sectional qualifying where half of the field only qualify for this tournament on June 5th. So they've only known they've been in the field for a handful of days. So their practice would have had to happen afterwards. If you're someone like Rory McIlroy or Scottie Scheffler that you're always in the majors, I'm sure, you know, if your agent talks to the head pro and if you want to come by on March 10th, they can probably sneak in on the tee sheet. So a lot of it, as with many things in golf and in life, it depends on who you are and who you know. So if you're in the field the entire year, you can probably get in. But a lot of these guys didn't know they had qualified until about a week and a half ago.
So, Will, you know, with this, we saw Ricky Fowler. I think he had the lowest round ever in U.S. Open history. You know, it doesn't feel like where we're looking at the scores of this thing with, you know, Fowler at 8-under, Schauffele at 8-under, Harmon at 5-under. This doesn't feel like a typical type of U.S. Open where, you know, again, guys have probably, I'm guessing probably guys have won the U.S. Open at 8-under.
Oh, for sure. I mean, guys won the U.S. Open at even par before as well. So I think that, you know, as folks were getting to the course this morning, and there was a little bit of drizzle in the air and kind of the June gloom that the, you know, the West Coast is known for. Once that settled in and the conditions are going to be just a little bit softer than they expected, you figured the low scores were on the horizon. The rest of the forecast for the rest of the week seems pretty good. So I absolutely think that if you were going to get it, you had to get it today because it's going to get more difficult tomorrow. And certainly by the weekend, it's going to firm up and get much faster. So this could be something where, you know, 8-under leads on Thursday and 6-under leads on Friday and 4-under ends up winning this golf tournament. But at the same time, there is this element of the unknown course. The USGA, when they're setting it up, they're not sure exactly how they want to go with it. And it's shades of Erin Hills back when Brooks Koepka won in 2017, where the scores were just a lot lower than people thought they would be because they maybe went a little bit more conservative on how they set up the course early in the week.
You know, Will, I know this is probably a ridiculous question, but, you know, when you're playing on these courses, you know, how much does air quality and things like that play into all of this? I mean, we know about, you know, kind of the fog and the haze at times in L.A. and all that stuff, but, you know, does that factor into, you know, how you approach and play some of these courses in California?
Maybe Bryson has an air quality index guy with him on the range. I'm not sure. But, you know, I think that the biggest factor for golfers that they certainly take into account are twofold. One is altitude and the other is humidity, because those are going to affect how far the ball is going to travel in the air. So those are definitely, you know, when you go up in Colorado and you're hitting the ball a lot further than you'd expect, or, you know, when you're playing in Florida or Texas when it's really hot, sometimes the ball, you know, that changes things. I don't know that the air quality is going to be something that they factor. But it is, you know, an element of these guys, you know, on these cool mornings, the ball is going to go a lot shorter than it is if they play in the afternoon when the, you know, the marine layer burns off and the sun is warm and the temperature is 80 degrees at tee off as opposed to maybe 60 or 65. So those are definitely some factors that guys are considering. And the thought is that hopefully it balances out across the end of the week that, you know, you have one early tee time, you have one late tee time, and then you sort out the rest over the weekend.
Is there anything to read into this leaderboard where, you know, it's a very top-heavy American leaderboard? Like, there's not very many international players. I mean, Rory's in fourth place. Siwoo Kim and Barjan, you know, tied for seventh. I mean, there's not very many foreign players in this. Is that just lack of exposure? Is there anything to read into this? I mean, you know, what makes this tournament so far so top-heavy with Americans?
I think, first of all, it's a numbers game. You've got a lot more Americans and a lot more Americans in the top 10, top 20, top 30 in the world rankings that then can play well. You know, Rory getting off to a strong start isn't a huge surprise. I think Victor Hovland from Norway was someone that a lot of people had circled as a potential contender, and he was a little slow out of the gates, although he did rebound later in his round. So, you know, it helps when the numbers are on your side. You've got a lot more potential candidates who could really play well and get up on the leaderboard. But maybe there is something to be said for, especially early this morning, it was the California vibe, right? A lot of the guys that were from the West Coast that know how to play these greens and these types of grasses, and maybe they've seen the course, either like Scottie Scheffler has played this course in the Walker Cup 6 years ago. Max Homa was a very popular pick early in the week because he shot a 61 at this course for a course record back in 2013 when he was at Cal playing in the Pac-12 championship. So, yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of course experience to go around, but the players that do know this course a little bit more than most are usually going to be the Americans.
Will Gray joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline as he oversees Golf Bet for the PGA Tour. So give me a couple of names. I know you do the betting thing and you get involved in that. Couple of guys that have big odds that could really make some noise over the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Ricky Fowler was someone that was absolutely on the short list. I mean, those odds have dwindled significantly in the last 12 hours as he shot that 62 and then was quickly matched by Xander Schauffele. But it's funny when you have a dynamic like this where you have two guys that are out and they're out so far ahead of the pack that you think essentially that they're probably going to drift back a little bit. So I think anyone in there at even par or anything in red numbers, you're going to be in good shape. But, you know, that's kind of how we're engineered to think about a U.S. Open is anytime you're under par, you're probably doing okay. So I think this is a chance to get, you know, some of those guys. Like I said, Victor Hovland was someone that started slowly, and his odds are certainly much higher right now than they were at the start of the tournament. So if you're there and you feel like you're one under and, oh, my gosh, I'm trailing by 7 shots, there's a lot of golf still to play. And I certainly think that the winning score, there's a good chance the winning score is less than the 8 under par mark that they're currently sitting at.
Do you think without a Tiger Woods in a tournament like this that the uniqueness of the course and it's a course that we never see and things like that, do you think that can drive some TV numbers? Do you think that TV numbers can maybe not approach Tiger kinds of levels, but, you know, certainly, you know, the I guess, unique factor about this course, can that be something that drives TV numbers?
I think that the unique factor of a course in Los Angeles will drive TV numbers more than the unique factor of a course in Wisconsin. You know, I think that there's a big piece of this is just the primetime viewing and the fact that for an East Coast audience, you're going to be playing until 11 o'clock p.m., you know, the next 3 days, the Saturday night third round. The leaders are going to tee off at probably 5 o'clock Eastern. So, you know, anytime you have a chance, especially with the sports calendar being at a little bit of a low point, you've already got the Stanley Cup Finals wrapped up, the NBA Finals wrapped up. This is going to take center stage this week, and you're going to have an opportunity for some primetime viewing hours, which as a fan, I think that's great. And certainly from a television executive side, that's probably good, and there's no coincidence that they continue to bounce back and forth. When you look at these U.S. Open venues over the last 5 or 6 years, it goes New York, you know, West Coast, Boston, West Coast. They're trying to capitalize in some of these big markets, and the opportunity to have a primetime audience like this in the middle of the summer is one that they don't want to pass up too often.
Okay, well, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you some of the things that have gone on since we've last chatted. Obviously, as the PGA and LIV and everybody's, you know, coming together in some kumbaya kinds of moments, I think one of the things that I was most fascinated by is Jay Monahan talking about and kind of admitting about how contentious these meetings were when he met with players and talked through it. That, I mean, he talked about it being heated and, you know, wasn't, you know, warm and fuzzy. That, you know, again, I guess I didn't expect that from the commissioner to kind of be that brutally honest about, you know, the reaction from players, that, you know, it would have been a more kind of positive spin on everything. But I'll give him credit. I mean, he was brutally honest about what was really going on and that it was very contentious when they met with these guys about forming all of this together.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, he was certainly being as transparent as he could in the moment. I think there were definitely some contentious moments and some contentious thoughts. You know, I think that right now the issue is whether you're, you know, a PGA Tour player or a PGA Tour employee or just a golf fan, you have more questions than answers about what this whole thing's going to look like. And it's going to take not only weeks but several months for this to kind of come to fruition, for people to understand the specifics behind the framework that was announced last week. And then, you know, you've got to have It's going to be voted by the policy board on the PGA Tour side. It's probably going to have to get passed by the Department of Justice on the federal side. So there are more hoops and obstacles to this thing than I care to count. And so right now, I love the fact that we have a chance to put the focus back on the golf and have a great tournament this week at LACC. But you're right. I mean, I think that a lot of people were caught off guard, and I think that that's understandable then to kind of react in that way when you have such monumental news. I mean, that was a where were you moment in the world of golf, no matter where you stand in the game. And from there, we're going to have to see how those pieces come together.
Is the best thing for the sport, is it for LIV to go away as quickly as possible and get some kind of resolution to what's going to be the future of golf? Because that's, I mean, look, it is a dividing line in the sand for some people. And obviously, you know, there are all kinds of rulings about, okay, if you were offered this money, you can get this. I mean, there's a lot of things I know that they're trying to work out with all of this, but is the best thing for the health of the sport of golf to finally just get the LIV tournament behind us in the rearview mirror and start focusing on whatever the PGA Tour is going to become?
Yeah, I mean, I think regardless of which side you're on in this discussion or battle or however you want to frame it, the best end result is to have the best players in the world playing together more than four times a year.
Right.
I think that the fractured landscape over the last year and a half or 2 years has been difficult, and it's been one that it's the biggest losses for the fan and the viewer, right? Because now all of a sudden you don't know where to turn or which tournament to watch, or maybe you know the field has 70% or 80% of the guys that you're used to. And so I think that that's why it's an opportunity to celebrate these weeks like the U.S. Open and these majors, where yes, you have, you know, Bryson and DJ and Phil and Koepka alongside all of the PGA Tour guys.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 92.9, The Game, back at a Chuckery Show, hanging out in the Kia Studios on this Thursday evening with you. 404-726-0929, 404-726-0929. That's our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to be a part of the show. Braves are underway right now. U.S. Open is kind of wrapping up here, and one of the great mystery courses, I guess, in the city of Los Angeles, where it's really not visible anywhere on the streets or anything like that. Let's head out to the WadeFord.com hotline. He is our guy in the know. He oversees Golf Bet for the PGA Tour. Will Gray joining us. And you can follow Will on his personal Twitter page, at Will Gray Golf Bet. Will, as always, man, appreciate the time. Thank you so much. And listen, clear up the mystery about what this course is, because it is the secretive course, I guess, that that they're playing at the Los Angeles Country Club.
Yeah, John, good to be with you, as always, for these big events. I mean, it's next to the Playboy Mansion, right? So it's
right.
Kind of sticking out. It's sticking out there. Not that hard to find out in La La Land, but it's been interesting to see. You know, I enjoy these tournaments. We've had a few of them at the U.S. Open in recent years. We get to see a new course, and this is one that, yes, they had the Pac-12 championships there about 10 years ago, and yes, they had a Walker Cup back in 2017, but this is really the first time that these pros are able to get their hands on this course. And so far, the scores are certainly much lower than we expected, but I think that could change by the time we get to the weekend.
So help me understand, Because this is an ultra private club. Can guys who are going to play in this event play this course at any time, or only the week leading in? Or help me understand about what exposure the guys in this tournament would have had to this course.
A lot of it depends on when you qualified, right? So with the U.S. Open, they do the sectional qualifying where half of the field only qualify for this tournament on June 5th. So they've only known they've been in the field for a handful of days. So their practice would have had to happen afterwards. If you're someone like Rory McIlroy or Scottie Scheffler that you're always in the majors, I'm sure, if your agent talks to the head pro and if you want to come by on March 10th, they can probably sneak you in on the tee sheet. So a lot of it, as with many things in golf and in life, it depends on who you are and who you know. So if you're in the field the entire year, you can probably get in. But a lot of these guys didn't know they had qualified until about a week and a half ago.
So, Will, with this, we saw Ricky Fowler. I think he had the lowest round ever in U.S. Open history. It doesn't feel like where we're looking at the scores of this thing with, Fowler at 8-under, Schauffele at 8-under, Harmon at 5-under. This doesn't feel like a typical type of U.S. Open where, guys have probably, I'm guessing probably guys have won the U.S. Open at 8-under.
Oh, for sure. Guys won the U.S. Open at even par before as well. So I think that, as folks were getting to the course this morning, and there was a little bit of drizzle in the air and kind of the June gloom that the West Coast is known for. Once that settled in and the conditions were going to be just a little bit softer than they expected, you figured the low scores were on the horizon. The rest of the forecast for the rest of the week seems pretty good. So I absolutely think that if you were going to get it, you had to get it today, because it's going to get more difficult tomorrow, and certainly by the weekend, it's going to firm up and get much faster. So this could be something where, 8-under leads on Thursday and 6-under leads on Friday and 4-under ends up winning this golf tournament. But at the same time, there is this element of the unknown course. The USGA, when they're setting it up, they're not sure exactly how they want to go with it. And it's shades of Aaron Hills back when Brooks Koepka won in 2017, where the scores were just a lot lower than people thought they would be, because they maybe went a little bit more conservative on how they set up the course early in the week.
Will, I know this is probably a ridiculous question, but, when you're playing on these courses, how much does air quality and things like that play into all of this? We know about, kind of the fog and the haze at times in L.A. and all that stuff, but, does that factor into, how you approach and play some of these courses in California?
Maybe Bryson has an air quality index guy with him on the range. I'm not sure. But, I think that the biggest factor for golfers that they certainly take into account are twofold. One is altitude, and the other is humidity, because those are going to affect how far the ball is going to travel in the air. So those are definitely, when you go up in Colorado and you're hitting the ball a lot further than you'd expect, or, when you're playing in Florida or Texas when it's really hot, sometimes the ball, that changes things. I don't know that the air quality is going to be something that they factor. But it is, an element of these guys, on these cool mornings, the ball is going to go a lot shorter than it is if they play in the afternoon when the marine layer burns off and the sun is warm and the temperature is 80 degrees at tee off as opposed to maybe 60 or 65. So those are definitely some factors that guys are considering. And the thought is that hopefully it balances out across the end of the week, that, you have one early tee time, you have one late tee time, and then you sort out the rest over the weekend.
Is there anything to read into this leaderboard where, it's a very top-heavy American leaderboard? Like, there's not very many international players. Rory's in fourth place. Siwoo Kim and Barjan, tied for seventh. There's not very many foreign players in this. Is that just lack of exposure? Is there anything to read into this? What makes this tournament so far so top-heavy with Americans?
I think, first of all, it's a numbers game. You've got a lot more Americans and a lot more Americans in the top 10, top 20, top 30 in the world rankings that then can play well. Rory getting off to a strong start isn't a huge surprise. I think Victor Hovland from Norway was someone that a lot of people had circled as a potential contender, and he was a little slow out of the gates, although he did rebound later in his round. So, it helps when the numbers are on your side, and you've got a lot more potential candidates who could really play well and get up on the leaderboard. But maybe there is something to be said for, especially early this morning, it was the California vibe, right? A lot of the guys that were from the West Coast that know how to play these greens and these types of grasses, and maybe they've seen the course, either like Scottie Scheffler has played this course in the Walker Cup 6 years ago. Max Homa was a very popular pick early in the week because he shot a 61 at this course for a course record back in 2013 when he was at Cal playing in the Pac-12 championship. So, yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of course experience to go around, but the players that do know this course a little bit more than most are usually going to be the Americans.
Will Gray joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline as he oversees golf bet for the PGA Tour. So give me a couple of names. I know you do the betting thing and you get involved in that. Couple of guys that have big odds that could really make some noise over the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Ricky Fowler was someone that was absolutely on the short list. I mean, those odds have dwindled significantly in the last 12 hours as he shot that 62 and then was quickly matched by Xander Schauffele. But it's funny when you have a dynamic like this where you have two guys that are out and they're out so far ahead of the pack that you think essentially that they're probably going to drift back a little bit. So I think anyone in there at even par or anything in red numbers, you're going to be in good shape. But, you know, that's kind of how we're engineered to think about a U.S. Open is anytime you're under par, you're probably doing okay. So I think this is a chance to get, you know, some of those guys, like I said, Victor Hovland was someone that started slowly and his odds are certainly much higher right now than they were at the start of the tournament. So if you're there and you feel like you're one under and, oh my gosh, I'm trailing by 7 shots, there's a lot of golf still to play. And I certainly think that the winning score, there's a good chance the winning score is less than the 8-under par mark that they're currently sitting at.
Do you think without a Tiger Woods in a tournament like this that the uniqueness of the course and it's a course that we never see and things like that, do you think that can drive some TV numbers? Do you think that TV numbers can maybe not approach Tiger kinds of levels, but, you know, certainly, you know, the I guess, unique factor about this course, can that be something that drives TV numbers?
I think that the unique factor of a course in Los Angeles will drive TV numbers more than the unique factor of a course in Wisconsin. You know, I think that there's a big piece of this is just the primetime viewing and the fact that for an East Coast audience, you're going to be playing until 11 o'clock p.m., you know, the next 3 days, the Saturday night third round. The leaders are going to tee off at probably 5 o'clock Eastern. So, you know, anytime you have a chance, especially with the sports calendar being at a little bit of a low point, you've already got the Stanley Cup Finals wrapped up, the NBA Finals wrapped up. This is going to take center stage this week, and you're going to have an opportunity for some primetime viewing hours, which as a fan, I think that's great. And certainly from a television executive side, that's probably good. And there's no coincidence that they continue to bounce back and forth. When you look at these U.S. Open venues over the last 5 or 6 years, it goes New York, you know, West Coast, Boston, West Coast. They're trying to capitalize in some of these big markets, and the opportunity to have a primetime audience like this in the middle of the summer is one that they don't want to pass up too often.
Okay, well, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you some of the things that have gone on since we've last chatted. Obviously, as the PGA and LIV and everybody's, you know, coming together in some kumbaya kinds of moments, I think one of the things that I was most fascinated by is Jay Monahan talking about and kind of admitting about how contentious these meetings were when he met with players and talked through it. That, I mean, he talked about it being heated and, you know, wasn't, you know, warm and fuzzy. That, you know, again, I guess I didn't expect that from the commissioner to kind of be that brutally honest about, you know, the reaction from players, that, you know, it would have been a more kind of positive spin on everything. But I'll give him credit. I mean, he was brutally honest about what was really going on and that it was very contentious when they met with these guys about forming all of this together.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, he was certainly being as transparent as he could in the moment. I think there were definitely some contentious moments and some contentious thoughts. You know, I think that right now the issue is whether you're, you know, a PGA Tour player or a PGA Tour employee or just a golf fan, you have more questions than answers about what this whole thing's going to look like. And it's going to take not only weeks but several months for this to kind of come to fruition, for people to understand the specifics behind the framework that was announced last week. And then, you know, you've got to have it's going to be voted by the policy board on the PGA Tour side. It's probably going to have to get passed by the Department of Justice on the federal side. So there are more hoops and obstacles to this thing than I care to count. And so right now, I love the fact that we have a chance to put the focus back on the golf and have a great tournament this week at LACC. But you're right. I mean, I think that a lot of people were caught off guard, and I think that that's understandable then to kind of react in that way when you have such monumental news. I mean, that was a where were you moment in the world of golf no matter where you stand in the game. And from there, we're going to have to see how those pieces come together.
Is the best thing for the sport, is it for LIV to go away as quickly as possible and get some kind of resolution to what's going to be the future of golf? Because that's, I mean, look, it is a dividing line in the sand for some people. And obviously, you know, there are all kinds of rulings about, okay, if you were offered this money, you can get the. I mean, there's a lot of things I know that they're trying to work out with all of this, but is the best thing for the health of the sport of golf to finally just get the LIV tournament behind us in the rearview mirror and start focusing on whatever the PGA Tour is going to become?
Yeah, I mean, I think regardless of which side you're on in this discussion or battle or however you want to frame it, the best end result is to have the best players in the world playing together more than four times a year.
Right.
I think that the fractured landscape over the last year and a half or 2 years has been difficult, and it's been one that it's the biggest losses for the fan and the viewer, right? Because now all of a sudden you don't know where to turn or which tournament to watch, or maybe you know the field has 70% or 80% of the guys that you're used to, and so I think that that's why it's an opportunity to celebrate these weeks like the U.S. Open and these majors, where yes, you have, you know, Bryson and DJ and Phil and Koepka alongside all of the PGA Tour guys. But I think that long term, the best end result for players, for tournament organizers, for fans, whatever, is to have all of those guys playing the same schedule week in and week out.
Well, listen, at the end of the day, Will, all I hope is that you get some of that LIV money. I hope you get some of that Saudi money, because you always do a great job with us here, and we always appreciate it. You can check him out. He is overseeing Golf Bet for the PGA Tour. He's on Twitter, at Will Gray Golf Bet, and he joined me here on the WaitForIt.com hotline. Will, as always, man, appreciate it, buddy. Thanks so much for the time tonight, and we always look forward to chatting with you.
Oh, good, John. Thanks. Good to be with you, as always.
You got it. So, yeah, I tried to kind of softball a little bit because he does work for the PGA Tour, you know, and I mean, I don't know how much and how deep he wanted to get into it. I mean, you know, again, if he was with, you know, Golf Channel and, you know, the NBC Sports Bet, might have been a little different story, but I mean, he works for the PGA Tour now because he's overseeing Golf Bet. So I always appreciate Will's time, and he's always given great insight and in knowledge into everything. All right, coming back for the top of the hour, it will be the Falcons flyover. David Onyemata talks about this defense, plus PFF's wide receiver core rankings. Chuck Green, the Kia Studios, Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game, the Odyssey.com app.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.